The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.
And it's time for Dr. Brittany Dean to get into our topics and answer all your medical questions inside of the Lunchtime Doctor. We say hello, Dr. Dean.
Hello, Bees. I hope everybody is having a great day. And today we have another interesting topic to talk about. You know, we're still in that theme of anemia. And yesterday we spoke a little bit about sickle cell anemia. So today we're going to touch on that topic because it is something that is prevalent in the Caribbean countries. You know, even in the pediatric system, I used to see a good bit of kids with sickle cell anemia. And a lot of people don't know what it actually is, what it results from, and what are the complications that can arise with it. So we are going to be talking about sickle cell anemia today, but of course, we take any medical related questions and you can call in, send a WhatsApp, and we'll have a conversation about it.
All right, definitely, folks. As always, our numbers are 625-2257. That's 625-2257. WhatsApp us at 306-1065. So let's get into it as we talk about sickle cell today, and I'm sure we're all going to learn a lot about it. So what is sickle cell anemia and how does it differ from other types of anemias that we spoke about yesterday?
Yeah, so yesterday we touched on anemia is not just, you know, that low iron or that low hemoglobin. There are several different types of anemia, and sickle cell anemia falls under one of the categories called hemolytic anemia. And what hemolytic means, you know, lysis really means splitting. So really and truly, hemolytic anemia refers to a type of anemia is where you have that splitting of the red blood cells. Now, sickle cell anemia is actually one of the genetic blood disorders that causes red blood cells, which are usually round and flexible and look like little circles, to assume a different type of shape. And that shape is a rigid crescent or sickle-like shape. And that's where it gets its name, because the shape of that red blood cell is no longer circular, but it looks like, you know, that half crescent sort of moon shape. Now, these abnormally shaped cells will have a lot of difficulty traveling through the blood vessels. And when it has that difficulty, you know, traveling through the blood vessels, it's going to lead to blockages. And when it leads to those blockages, you don't have that efficient oxygen delivery to the tissues and to the organs. So this condition is really a type of hemoglobinopathy, and that is really just a big word to say it's one of those blood disorders that is caused by the abnormal formation of hemoglobin, and that hemoglobin is called hemoglobin S. Now, unlike the iron deficiency anemia, which is the most common cause of anemia that we spoke about yesterday, that is the result of the insufficient iron in the diet or even from blood loss. Now, sickle cell anemia is different because it's not caused by these external factors, but by a hereditary mutation, meaning that you get it from your mom or your dad or, you know, family members from the past who has had sickle cell anemia. And another thing to note is that our red blood cells in our body, it actually has quite a long lifespan. So about 120 days of being alive before it needs to be replenished. And that is very good because that means that our oxygen delivery to our tissues and organs is very efficient in that 120 days. Now, in sickle cell anemia, because these red blood cells now have this very abnormal shape, the lifespan is basically cut in half. So it's actually way less than half. It's about only 10 to 20 days compared to that normal 120 days of those red blood cells. So that leads to a consistently shortage of red blood cells in a person who has sickle cell anemia. And that is a chronic hemolytic anemia that they will always have because that sickle shape makes that red blood cell lifespan much shorter. And additionally, those misshapen cells, they can actually clump together. And when they clump together, they form blockages, which results in a lot of pain crises and other complications such as organ damage. So this condition affects not only the blood, but the entire body because of its impact on the transportation of oxygen and nutrients throughout the body.
All right, so I guess that would answer our questions. What causes sickle cell anemia and how is it inherited? So it's always you, like you said, you get it from your parents.
Right. So that is a very important point because later on we're going to discuss about why we have to discuss these traits or why we even test for them in mothers who are pregnant. Now, sickle cell anemia is actually caused by a mutation in our genes. And that gene, the genes that basically code or the genes that basically make up hemoglobin, it has become mutated. And that hemoglobin, like I mentioned before, that's the protein in the red blood cells that is responsible for that oxygen transportation. Now, this mutation actually leads to the production of what we call hemoglobin S. So that is what we see in sickle cell anemia. And that hemoglobin S, unfortunately, distorts the shape of red blood cells, especially when we are in low oxygen conditions. And the disease itself means that the person must inherit one defective gene from each of their parent to actually have that disease. Now, if that individual inherits only one of the sickle cell gene, they will have what we call sickle cell trait. And that generally causes no symptoms, but that makes them a carrier of the gene. So couples who both carry the gene, for example, if mom has the sickle cell trait and if dad has the sickle cell trait, then they have a 25% chance of having a child with sickle cell anemia or a 50% chance of having a child with the sickle cell trait. Or they even have a 25% chance of having a child without the gene at all. So this inheritance pattern, that is going to underscore the importance of having that sort of genetic counseling in at-risk populations. So in Trinidad and Tobago, we actually test for the sickle cell trait in mothers who are pregnant.
All right. And can you explain what the symptoms of sickle cell anemia and how they manifest in patients?
So this is very important, especially in the pediatric population, where we see a lot of children having sickle cell anemia. They will, or more than likely, will be hospitalized for some portion of their life because of the symptoms that they will exhibit. Now, symptoms of sickle cell anemia, it will actually vary in severity. And that are symptoms that we do see in all different types of anemia. So fatigue, paleness. Now in sickle cell anemia, because of the issues with the sickling shape of the red blood cells, these children may also have liver issues causing jaundice. And they may even have some sort of delay in their growth development. And they may even get frequent infections. One of the hallmark symptoms is the sickle cell crisis itself. And that is actually characterized by episodes of severe pain. And that is because, you know, they will get these blocked blood flow in their small blood vessels. And these crises can actually last from hours to days. And they often require hospitalization for pain management. Now, patients may also experience different complications of this disease. So they may get swelling in their hands and feet. And this is actually known as something called dactylitis. They may even get vision problems because of blockages in the blood vessels in the eyes. And they may even get frequent infections because of spleen dysfunction. Now, the spleen is responsible for producing those white blood cells so that it can fight bacterial infections. So when they get this spleen dysfunction, they are not able to efficiently guard themselves against infections. Now, over time, they may even get chronic organ damage that can occur because it will affect the heart, it will affect the kidneys, the liver, the brain, leading to many different complications. So we do see sickle cell patients having strokes or kidney failure or even heart failure. And these symptoms can occur as early as infancy, and it will often worsen as they become older.
All right, folks, remember, we will be taking a break in just a short while to take some of your calls and your questions. Get ready to call us up at 625-2257. Send your WhatsApp messages on any of your medical issues, even though we're talking about sickle cell, 306-1065. And you could feel free to message Sangeet 106.1 or Sky 99.5, and they will send the messages right to us here in studio. So the complications that can arise from for sickle cell anemia, if it's not properly managed, what are some of the complications?
So more than likely, when a child has sickle cell anemia, the parents will realize that they may have complications arising, such as very extreme pain, and they may be hospitalized for some of these complications. Now, if it is left unmanaged, sickle cell anemia can lead to very, very severe complications. So one of these is called acute chest syndrome. Now that particularly is a very life-threatening condition that resembles pneumonia. And what happens is that the lungs, the blood vessels of the lungs, become blocked by these sickle-shaped red blood cells. Now stroke is another major risk that sickle cell patients need to look out for, particularly in children. And that is because there's some sort of impairment of blood flow to the brain. The other complications that will ensue throughout their life would be things like the chronic pain, things like leg ulcers and gallstones, especially in the pediatric population. They may get gallbladder dysfunction, they may get gallstones, what we call cholecystitis. And I do recall having to take out, you know, the gallbladders of some pediatric patients who do have sickle cell anemia because of those gallstones. Kidney disease is something else that we definitely see commonly in sickle cell patients. Now, over time, that chronic organ damage, it will have a severe impact on the quality of life and even their life expectancy. So without proper care, the constant breakdown of those red blood cells can also lead to severe anemia, increasing the risk of heart failure and chronic fatigue as well.
All right, folks, of course, you're listening to The Lunchtime Doctor right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sky 99.5, and Sangeet 106.1 as we continue our topic with sickle cell anemia. Of course, Dr. Brittany Dean, you're listening to right now. How does sickle cell anemia affect our different age groups, such as children and adults? And can somebody have sickle cell and not have that many, you know, symptoms or effects on them as a child, and then it progresses later on in their adult life?
Well, really and truly, in children with sickle cell anemia, we tend to notice it one time because they will get these symptoms such as something like dactylitis or painful swelling of their hands and feet. They may even have some sort of delay in their growth and development, and they may have an increased susceptibility to infections. So more than likely, the pediatrician or the parents will pick up on it very early on in life. Now, in terms of no symptoms, we may see that more in children who have the sickle cell trait, but some symptoms may manifest in persons with the sickle cell trait if they are in, for example, high altitudes or very cold weather, where there may not be as much oxygen for them to have an efficient oxygen delivery in their body. But that is really the only time we see sickle cell patients not having any symptoms, when they just have the trait and not the actual disease itself. Now, in terms of children, like I mentioned before, the parents may pick up on their hands and feet swelling, and it may be very painful for these children. And parents may even pick up that they may have some sort of delay in their growth and in their development. And they may get very sick very often because of that increased susceptibility to infections. And these children often require early intervention. So they may require some sort of vaccination and antibiotics to prevent severe infections like pneumonia. Now, as they age, you know, the disease typically becomes much more complicated. Adults may experience chronic pain, organ damage, and they may have a greater risk of conditions such as pulmonary hypertension or kidney failure and even stroke. And despite these challenges, you know, we have a lot of advancements in healthcare now that has significantly improved their life expectancy, with many of the patients now living well into adulthood.
All right, let's take a chance for some of your questions at 625-2257. Call us up or message us on the WhatsApp at 306-1065-1222 on time. All right, so hello, Doc. I am a 32-year-old pregnant mom in my second trimester and very worried about the health of my baby. I do everything to ensure, but are there any preventative measures? As you're talking about sickle cell, what are some of the preventative measures that a parent can do?
So really and truly, there once you have the sickle cell trait, there's nothing that you can do to prevent anything. The only thing that we usually try to, we try not to have a mother and father who both have the sickle cell trait. You know, we counsel them in terms of having a child. If there's a high likelihood that the child may have sickle cell anemia. If you have the trait, then, and your partner does not have the trait, then the chances are very slim that the child will have sickle cell anemia, but they may just get or may develop the trait itself. So there's no preventative measure that you can take in terms of if you have the trait and if your partner has the trait. That is something that is innate, that is something that is already coded in your DNA. So there's nothing that you can do to prevent that in your pregnancy. If you are worried about the health of your child, then of course my advice would be to ensure that you are going to all of your appointments with your OBGYN, getting all of the ultrasounds in your first, second, and third trimester. There are specific ultrasounds that are done for fetal abnormalities, etc., in particular trimesters. So make sure that you are going to all of your appointments. Make sure that you're taking all your prenatal vitamins, etc., so that you can have some sort of clarification when it comes to the health of your child. But when it comes to sickle cell, particularly, because it is something that is a genetic mutation, there's not much that you can do to prevent that particularly.
And does it depend on who has the trait? Let's say the father has the trait and the mother doesn't.
No. So it really is, if one parent has the trait, then chances are the child is not going to have sickle cell anemia, the disease, but there's also a very slim chance that they may become a carrier of the trait. So what that means is that they may just have the trait. They will not have any symptoms of the disease itself, but they may just be a carrier of the trait. So if that child who has the trait marries somebody who also has the trait, then that their child may have sickle cell anemia. If one parent has the trait, then the child may just have the trait or may not have the trait itself.
All right. My dad has hemorrhoids and the Bleeding Kind Hospital postponed the surgery. Is there any cure for it?
If the hospital or the doctors suggested some sort of surgical intervention. It may be that he has a complicated case of hemorrhoids. Now, there are things that he can do to alleviate the pain that may be caused by the hemorrhoids, taking sitz baths, warm sitz baths for about 10 to 15 minutes several times a day. That can help. And also to include some fiber in his diet to ensure that the stool does not cause any sort of constipation. Make sure that he is well hydrated. There are even some creams that he can use to apply topically. But if he was required to have surgery, there's not much that can cure it without the surgical intervention.
Hi, doctor. Migraines and frequent headaches, is that a sign of something in the body?
So if somebody is having migraines and frequent headaches, that can be a cause of many different factors. So you have to look at your lifestyle factors as well. Genetics. Does your mom or dad, are they prone to migraines? That can often run in families. You also have to look at the neurological factors. So if you're getting migraines very frequently and they are very severe and they're not alleviated by drinking enough water or staying away from your triggers, then that is something that you need to take to your doctor. There are certain red flags that we definitely look out for when somebody is having a migraine. For example, if they're getting some sort of seizure after the migraine, if that migraine is also accompanied by other different neurological factors. So if they're forgetting things, if they may have some sort of vomiting, excessive vomiting, or any other systemic symptoms. So there are also stresses that you have to look out for. So just physical and emotional stress, hormonal changes, particularly in menstruation or pregnancy, the dietary habits, all of these things that you have to look out for and try to tailor it to your lifestyle. So there are many things that can cause a migraine. If it is very severe and it's happening very often, I definitely suggest that you go to your doctor and get it checked out.
All right, we had somebody calling while you were on the air there. We'll give them a second to call back at 625-2257. 625-2257. Of course, folks, you're listening to the Lunchtime Doctor. Let me see. We have some WhatsApp messages here.
Good day, doctor. I know that this question might be a little out of your qualification to answer, but you know, you could give it a try still.
Okay.
Is it achievable, or has it been achieved by senior scientists, that they are able to manipulate or modify, change the DNA of humanity? Has that achievement been made in science?
So I would say that in terms of genetic and DNA manipulation, I would say that it has advanced significantly in the recent years, because we now, etc. You know, the potential is vast, but it has come down to a lot of ethical and technical and safety considerations. So there are certain techniques that I know that they have done for genetic mutation, but I can't really expound on it because, you know, like you rightfully said, it is out of my scope of work. I don't work in genetic engineering. Unfortunately, it is a very vast and growing field, but I don't think that there has been a case that I know of where they've done a lot of it. Now, there's significant advancement when we're talking about sickle cell anemia and things like cystic fibrosis now, but we'll get to that later on. But I'm not too sure. There's things like the gene therapy and epigenetic manipulation, all of these different things. But there are also limitations to these things because it can cause a lot of harm to our health. There's a lot of environmental and agricultural uses that has come out of genetic modifications in terms of plants, etc. But for humans, you know, there are a lot of things that still need to be considered.
Right, you see, the doctor passed the test. No questions beyond the qualifications. Let's take a call. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hello. Yes, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Doctor, I would like to know if the importance of the pulse, reading the pulse, that is important.
Can you repeat that?
Yeah, the importance of the pulse reading, the pulse reading.
So that is actually, you know, that's basically how we measure our heart rate. And it really is a way to assess your cardiovascular health. And it really is going to provide that sort of information about how well your heart is functioning, and it can even help to detect any underlying medical conditions. Now, in terms of a normal pulse reading, it will be around 60 to less than 100. Now, in terms of athletes, they may have a pulse reading that is a little less. So around 40 to 50s, we do see a lower pulse reading in athletes, and this is because they have superior cardiovascular conditioning. Now, when your pulse rate goes above 100, that means that you're in something called tachycardia, and there can be several reasons for that. You know, the reasons that we don't really consider, or the reasons that are normal, would be you are doing something strenuous, like some sort of exercise activity, lifting something heavy, or going for a run. These things do elevate your heart rate, and that is good in terms of your cardiovascular conditioning. Now, if your heart rate is, say, 120, 130, 140, and you are just in a resting position, then there's something that is going on innate that we need to figure out. Why are you getting tachycardic? And we definitely see tachycardia when somebody is losing a lot of blood, or has a lot of trauma, or having some sort of anxiety or panic attack. So when it goes above 100, then we are concerned, especially if it is not because of an exercise related or you know, any sort of strenuous activity that the body is doing. And likewise, you know, when it goes below 50, then we say that you're in bradycardia, which is it can be very fatal in cases where people are not athletic or they don't have proper cardiovascular conditioning. So when it goes less than 50 in a normal average person, we have to figure out why. Are they going through some sort of heart block? Is something going on with the electrical activity of the heart? So the pulse rate and the pulse reading is very important. It's just important for you to know that 60 to 100, that is usually the normal.
All right, let's get another question here on the WhatsApp.
Giddy, Beast, Doc, what are the symptoms of measles? If you mind sharing it with us.
So in terms of measles, we do have several symptoms that we look out for. So the early symptoms, these will typically develop 10 to 14 days after you've had some sort of exposure to the virus. And it will be a very high fever, sometimes more than 40 degrees Celsius, a cough that is persistent and dry, the runny nose, the normal things that we do see with the common cold. Some people may also get conjunctivitis, which is red, watery eyes, and they will have general feelings of discomfort and fatigue. And then we see something called the coplic spots, which is small white or bluish spots with a red halo around it, appearing inside the mouth, particularly on the inner cheeks. And these are actually one of the hallmark of measles. They usually appear 2 to 3 days before the rash itself. And then the measles rash is 3 to 5 days after the onset of the other symptoms. So you may get these flat red spots that may basically merge together as they spread. So those that rash may start on the face and particularly around the hairline, and it will spread downwards towards the neck, the trunk, or the chest, the arms, the legs, and the feet. And the other symptoms you will get during that phase would be the high fever, swollen lymph nodes, and loss of appetite as well.
All right. Good afternoon, doctor. Is it true that mostly people of a certain ethnic group are prone to carry the DNA for sickle cell?
So that is true. You know, in terms of sickle cell anemia itself, there are certain ethnicities that are more prone to sickle cell anemia. So it will primarily affect persons of African descent. We definitely see it in the Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, and sometimes Indian descent as well. And this geographic distribution, that actually correlates with areas where malaria is or was historically prevalent, as carrying one of the sickle cell gene or the sickle cell trait itself actually provided some sort of resistance to malaria. But in African populations, we definitely see sickle cell being particularly common. We do have some data in terms of Americans. I unfortunately don't have the data for Trinidad, but what I can say is that 1 in 13 African Americans carry the trait, and 1 in 365 actually have the sickle cell disease. Now, it really is something that we do see, especially in the Afro-Caribbean population. We do see a lot of African children with the sickle cell anemia.
All right, let's get another call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, yeah. All right, so I am 55 years of age. I'm pretty thin. I have a history of kidney stones. Mainly urine stream, not as awful as city, but it's a stream. It doesn't stutter or drip. I also noticed that my semen is not as much as it used to be. Is that a concern? Do I need to go see a doctor? Let's know first.
So, in terms of your age, we definitely do see what we call benign prostatic hyperplasia, where we have enlargement of the prostate gland, and it will commonly affect men of your age. And that is, remember, the prostate, it plays a role in producing that seminal fluid. And when the prostate enlarge, it can actually cause some sort of obstruction to your urine flow, leading to many of the symptoms that you may be experiencing as well. So there are medications that you can be placed on for BPH. So I do suggest that you go to your doctor or particularly a urologist to have this treated. But the symptoms to me sounds like you may be going through BPH or benign prostatic hyperplasia or enlargement of your prostate gland.
All right, folks, so we'll take a little break. We'll get back to our sickle cell topic and then we'll come back to some more of your questions and WhatsApp and calls. All right, so what triggers a sickle cell crisis and how can it be managed or prevented?
So a sickle cell crisis, that is actually triggered by factors that reduce oxygen levels in the blood. So if somebody who has sickle cell anemia becomes dehydrated, or if they're in high altitudes or extreme temperatures, and even something like an infection, all of these things can trigger a sickle cell crisis. And even stress, both physical and emotional stress, can exacerbate those episodes as well. And in terms of the management, that is going to include a lot of pain relief through medications, hydration, and sometimes even oxygen therapy. So we do try to implement prevention strategies for patients, particularly children with sickle cell anemia. So we try to tell the parents to let them avoid the triggers, have them stay well hydrated, avoid extreme weather, and to ensure that they get treatment for infections very promptly. And of course, it is essential for persons with sickle cell anemia to have their regular medical checkups along with their vaccinations and even their prophylactic antibiotics. All of those are essential to minimize the risk of them having a sickle cell crisis.
All right. Yes, folks, I see your WhatsApps coming in. We'll get back to them in just a short while. We're just taking some of our questions here for our sickle cell topic. How is sickle cell anemia diagnosed, and at what age is it typically identified? Can it be identified like right off from birth?
Yes. So sickle cell anemia is actually diagnosed through a blood test called hemoglobin electrophoresis. And that basically just identifies the presence of that hemoglobin S that causes the sickling shape of the red blood cells. So in many countries, we do have newborn screening programs to detect that disease shortly after birth. Now, for individuals that are not diagnosed in infancy, the symptoms such as anemia or the pain crises or the recurrent infections will often prompt testing later on in life. And that early diagnosis, that is going to allow for interventions like the vaccinations, the penicillin prophylaxis, and even education to reduce any sort of complications later on in life.
And what are the current treatment options available for sickle cell anemia?
So in terms of the treatment options, what we try to focus on is managing the symptoms and, of course, preventing the complications so that we can improve the quality of life of these children and even the adults. Now, the common treatments will include a daily dose of folic acid supplements so that you can support the red blood cell production. And we even recommend medications, things like hydroxyurea, and that is going to increase the production of the fetal hemoglobin, and that is going to reduce the sickling of the cells and, of course, reduce the pain crises. Now, in terms of the pain crises themselves, or the pain management, we usually use the class of drugs known as non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drugs or opioids if the crises are very, very severe. Blood transfusions in these patients are also a critical form of treatment, especially when we are looking to do things like prevent strokes or manage severe anemia. In very advanced cases of sickle cell anemia, we also have to let the patients consider bone marrow or stem cell transplantation. That can be curative in some aspects, although those procedures become very limited by the availability of the donors that can match these patients. And of course, there are also complications that are attached to these procedures. There are emerging therapies such as the gene editing, which I spoke about earlier, and some gene therapies, and that will hold great promise for future treatments. But unfortunately, right now, we are still in the process of, when I say we, of course, the genetic engineering departments in these high-end facilities in those first world countries. Those are the ones that are looking into these genetic engineering for these gene therapies for sickle cell patients for future treatments.
And are there any new advancements in research or treatments for this condition?
So, you know, I would say that the research is rapidly developing and rapidly advancing because there's so many therapies that are coming out now that hold great promise for the treatment of these patients. So gene therapy is definitely a groundbreaking approach that aims to correct the defective gene that is responsible for the disease. there's specific technology that is being studied to replace or repair the mutated hemoglobin gene and potentially offering a cure, of course, in future developments. Now, there are other advancements in terms of the novel drugs. For example, there's a specific drug that has been proven to improve that hemoglobin oxygen carrying capacity, and even things like L-glutamine that has shown to reduce the frequency of the pain crises. Now, clinical trials are also exploring things like the anti-inflammatory drugs and even therapies that are targeting the blood vessel function to address the complications that are experienced by persons who do have sickle cell anemia. So there are so many innovations that are coming out, and they can actually revolutionize the treatment and significantly improve the outcomes for patients with sickle cell anemia.
And how can individuals with sickle cell anemia improve their quality of life through lifestyle changes?
So I would say that lifestyle changes actually play a very vital and pivotal role in managing the sickle cell anemia. Now, staying well hydrated is definitely critical. Dehydration can worsen the viscosity of the blood. And when I say the viscosity, I'm talking about how well the blood will flow. Is it easily flowing through your veins like water? Or is it more of a sludgy material because these red blood cells become clumped together? So if it's more of a sludgy material, then of course it is not going to be efficient in flowing through your veins. So we definitely want that hydration in the body so that you can have proper viscosity of your blood. And that will decrease the risk of those red blood cells sickling and clumping together. Now, we also tell all sickle cell patients about that well-balanced diet, one that is rich in vitamins and minerals so that it can support their overall health. And they need to also avoid things like alcohol and smoking so that they reduce vascular complications in the long run. So, I mean, if you have sickle cell anemia, that is already putting your body at a disadvantage. So you don't want to make it worse by having unhealthy foods, foods that are not nourishing your body fully. Patients should also engage in their moderate intensity exercise to maintain their fitness, but you also need to avoid overexertion and, of course, extreme temperatures because those things can trigger a crisis. So it is important for sickle cell patients to have their exercise regimes tailored to them. They will not be able to perform, you know, high intensity exercises like a normal athletic person. They may need lower intensity, low impact, and moderate intensity training. Stress management techniques are also crucial. Things like meditation and therapy, those become beneficial for their mental well-being. And of course, it is important for them to have their regular medical checkups and to adhere to the prescribed medications, because that is going to be essential to have some sort of proactive health management.
All right, let's get back to some of our WhatsApp questions. A lot of them are coming in. Let's
listen. Yes, good day again. You know, this might be related to, well, it is to some extent related to a health issue. You know, I'm not sure if it happens in Forest Green or Mount Hope, but I am pleading to the authorities, right? It is very disheartening, distasteful. When you go to the San Fernando General Hospital and you're waiting on the west wing, the side that is closer to the sea, and you have pigeons pooping and pigeons parading at your footstep.
Something we'll have to plead with the Ministry of Health to please check out the pigeon infestation in the San Fernando West Wing. All right?
Yes.
Hello and good day, Doc. Continue doing a good job. I would like to see that in the healthcare system, if whoever in administration and they stick with the appointment system, it will help. Mm-hmm. Giving an appointment will save people a lot of time, and which everybody will know, or your doctors or your manager will know how much patient they could see for the day, and be real, have a reservation and balance it. So people now, if they come now, they will get a treatment, you won't have overcrowding. So I don't know if that is taking place in certain place that I went to, it's not functional. And I would like to know if in the San Fernando General Hospital, if the lab is working, that people could get their blood work done over there. And if not, because it wasn't working up to last month, right? So if that can't be done, then CT and ultrasound and everything is getting more difficult. Everything is difficult to get done. Yeah.
All right. Doctor, it seems like you're going to the Ministry of Health now.
I have to become minister now.
Yeah, you have to become minister.
Unfortunately, I don't work in San Fernando General, so I'm not too familiar with if their lab is working or up and running. And in terms of the appointments, I think that is a great way for people to come into the hospital. So, you know, we want to reduce the waiting times, etc. But remember, our healthcare system is also overburdened. So even when I used to go in clinics, there would be four doctors, and we probably have about 150 to 200 patients per day. And we have to see all those patients in a half-day period. So it really is about also having more facilities, you know, and having enough doctors in the place to basically be able to have those rules to not burden the healthcare system.
Mm-hmm. And of course, burdening the healthcare system when they get sick. And that's what this show is about. I mean, prevention is mm-hmm. better than cure. So if you take care of
exactly.
yourself, you mightn't end up in the hospital, right?
Exactly.
Right. Is mm-hmm. that screening on newborns done in our hospitals?
Yes, sometimes it is done, especially if we know that mommy and daddy both have sickle cell trait.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any calls coming in at 625-2257? Giving you a couple seconds, 625-2257, before we return to our questions and rounding up our sickle cell. We have just about 7 more minutes to go. All right, if not, we do continue. All right, so we spoke about what roles do genetic, counseling and prenatal screening play in managing the disease.
So genetic counseling becomes very crucial for couples who are at risk, particularly, you know, in our population where sickle cell anemia is present. So, you know, when we have that genetic counseling, because both mommy and daddy both have sickle cell trait, it will provide some sort of information about the likelihood of passing on the disease, and it will even help families make informed decisions about their family planning. We do have prenatal screening. So what we do is chorionic villus sampling or amniocentesis, where we can determine whether a fetus has sickle cell anemia or carries the trait. I'm actually not too sure if we do that in Trinidad, but I do know that we test mommy to see if she has the trait. Now, the carrier screening is also recommended before conception. So especially when we do have individuals from high-risk ethnic groups. If both of the parents are carriers, options such as like in vitro fertilization with genetic testing, those things can help to ensure that the child does not inherit the disease. And these interventions are critical because they're going to empower families to manage or prevent the condition. I mean, sometimes it's very difficult to see your child with sickle cell anemia in pain. And there's not much that you can do to prevent whether or not they are going to get sickle cell if both you and your husband do have the trait. And that is why we recommend the genetic counseling for these couples.
All right, let's take a phone call. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. I'm the Boston DC. I just need to find out if you died from sickle cell. Could you talk about vaccines like COVID or any other vaccine? for me because that's what we're struggling with.
You will kind of, you got
to keep it.
You sort of in and out, miss.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sorry, I just found out about sickle cell disease and COVID vaccine. We just had a family member who died in Trinidad, and it's a complication of vaccines.
Okay. She wants to know the connection. The connection about sickle cell and the COVID vaccine.
Right. So there's no actual connection to say that the COVID vaccine is going to have any sort of impact on sickle cell. In fact, remember, people with sickle cell disease are at an increased risk of the severe complications from COVID-19 because their immune system is weakened and they have chronic inflammation caused by their conditions. So it was recommended actually that vaccinations against COVID-19 was strongly recommended for those individuals to reduce the risk of their severe illness, hospitalization, and their death. So in terms of the recommendations, yes, it was recommended. I don't have any information to state that there has been any research about the complications of the vaccines on persons with sickle cell disease. All I can say was that it was recommended that they take it to reduce their risk of hospitalization from COVID-19.
All right, and what are the myths, any myths or misconceptions about sickle cell anemia and that you would like to address?
Right. Well, I mean, I guess one of the main things is that people think that sickle cell anemia will only affect those of African descent, but it will occur in other ethnic groups as well. We do see it in the Mediterranean, the Middle Eastern, and even in some East Indians as well. Another misconception is that all the carriers of the sickle cell trait will experience symptoms. That is not typically the case. Most individuals with the trait are actually asymptomatic, so they may not even know that they have the trait in some cases. And that's why it is important for us, when a mummy comes in, we do check to see if she has the sickle cell trait, because we are in an at-risk population. There's also a stigma, unfortunately, that individuals with sickle cell anemia are lazy because they have that frequent fatigue and pain. That is a huge misjudgment, and it actually overlooks the medical challenges that they face. So that is definitely something that we need to dispel, and dispelling all these myths, it becomes very crucial to fostering the understanding and improving the care for those who are living with sickle cell anemia.
And in just about a couple of seconds, that's it for show today. I guess we could quickly say what can communities and healthcare systems do better to support individuals with sickle cell anemia. Just about 35 seconds.
Of course, I think that it is essential for us to raise awareness, to reduce the stigma, and to advocate for better health resources for these patients. And there are even support groups that provide emotional and social support for the patients and their families. And there are educational programs that will help dispel the misconceptions about the disease. And our healthcare system as well, we can improve the outcomes by ensuring that we have access to the comprehensive specialists, the pain management clinics, and even some preventative services. And, you know, we need to have policies that support the newborn screenings as well.
All right, Doc. Well, thank you very much. Very informative program again.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.